This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Kanison and Noelle Lim. For now, we're turning our attention to the race for a digital banking license, which appears to be heating up.
Yeah, so RHB Bank and Axiata Group are joining forces to bid for a digital banking license from Bank Negara Malaysia. Yesterday's Axiata subsidiary Boost Holdings and RHB announced that they will form this consortium to apply for a license. And if approved, Boost Holdings will own 60% and RHB the remaining 40% in the digital bank.
So the two parties signed an MOU to explore potential strategic collaboration opportunities over the next 2 years. Excuse me, this is another hat thrown into the ring for a Malaysian digital banking license. Under the Bank Negara framework, Malaysia will be granting up to 5 new digital banking licenses in the first quarter 2020. Application of these licenses were opened at the beginning of the year and will close at the end of this month. So how is this race going to shape up moving forward? Joining us on the line to discuss the prospects of this Axiata RHB tie-up is Vincent Fong, Chief Editor at FinTech News Malaysia. Vincent, and thanks so much for joining us today. So what do Axiata and RHB bring to the table in this partnership? After all, it's a combination of an incumbent with a disruptor.
Hey, folks, thanks for having me. So in other markets where we've actually observed banks being part of the consortium, the banking partners often bring to the table deep expertise in finance and compliance. And I think that kind of experience with compliance give a lot of assurance to the regulators that there will be some degree of stability. On the other hand, if you look at players like Axiata under its Boost Holding, which houses financial services like the Boost e-wallet, Aspirasi, they're able to tap into a deep well of micro SMEs, which is a market that RHB does not really have access to. So often you look at incumbents, they find it challenging to make the unit economics work for this kind of market. So in the press conference yesterday, RHB seems quite hopeful that this partnership can help them to effectively penetrate this market.
So Vincent, while they haven't officially filed for a license yet, I think we're not expecting that sometime next year. How do you think this partnership stacks up against the BNM criteria?
So, Roshan, you're correct to point out that they haven't actually filed for the application yet, but I think it's a really strong bid, right? And they are able to fulfill Bank Negara's criteria of tapping an underserved market, which they've made it clear is actually the micro SMEs and the gig economy. Both of them have a very strong track record, and you know it's got a really decent value proposition. So I think it's a really strong bid.
Yeah. So this brings me to this question: will there be a clash of cultures, though?
So where we've observed other markets that has banking partners in the consortium, when they set up a separate subsidiary, it's entirely a new team. Maybe the CEO might be from one of the organizations, but I don't really foresee a big clash. And I think this is specifically why players like Boost would want a majority share, right? And I think that's probably part of the condition of the discussion, that they have a controlling stake to avoid that kind of clash within the organizations.
So do you think we'll see more tie-ups between traditional banking players and non-finance players in vying for these digital banking licenses?
It's entirely possible. So just last month, we did a digital banking webinar, which included the CEO of CIMB Digital Asset, Effendi, who is also the CEO of Touch & Go as well. They say they are actively exploring an option to join a consortium. And they did also say that they're not entirely hung up on being the controlling majority in that consortium. We should also remember that the Touch & Go e-wallet is jointly owned by N Group and Touch & Go. N Group has a digital banking license in Hong Kong and has also previously applied in Singapore as well. Let's not forget that Maybank also, if I'm not mistaken, owns 30% stake in GrabPay Malaysia. So it's entirely possible that they're already in talks as well.
So, you know, Vincent, when we take a look at the space, especially for the, there's a lot of talk, right? No real confirmation about who's getting in and who's not interested. Names like Grab, Axiata, of course, right now, Razor as well, another name there, BigPay, Sunway Berhad has also been linked with some possibilities in this space as well, JHL Systems. A lot of names in this space, but who do you think poses is the current front runner when digital banking becomes a real notion here next year?
Actually, we did put up a full list on our latest Malaysia FinTech report. There's like 20 odd players, right? Of course,
a lot the of major, players for sure.
A lot, and that's just the ones that have publicly confirmed. And there were unconfirmed rumors floating around, which included quite interesting names, right? We heard about C Group, YTL, and even Petronas rumored to be in talks for potential consortium partners. So there's a lot of strong players over there, but I think at this juncture, it's too soon to say because there's no full visibility on who the contenders are, and I think it really matters who's part of the consortium to for us to really ascertain who has a very good chance to win the license.
And you know, when we take a look at the digital financial space, a lot of these take Axiata for example. Last year, they partnered with the Great Eastern. They, you know, this everyone is slowly building up what seems to be a consortium to challenge for the space from an overall perspective. And I you know, as you noted, you put out a report last month. Who seems to be gaining the biggest foothold in Malaysia in that sense, right? Not just about digital banking, but in the digital financial space overall.
I think it's very difficult to conclusively say who has a foothold because within the digital financial services space, there's a lot of different verticals, right? You have those in wealth management, you have those in payments, and each of those verticals have one or two strong champions. So I don't know if I can categorically say, oh, this player is the best, that player is the best.
Well, walk us through the phases of setting up a digital bank and when will we actually see the first one becoming operational?
So from what we've seen in Hong Kong, it takes anywhere between 6 months to a year. But of course, as a market observer, we don't really have that depth of detail to look at the specific challenges, the specific phases of setting up a bank. But the time frame seems to be between 6 months to a year. But one thing's for sure is that talent is actually going to be a huge challenge. In Hong Kong, when we were observing the launch of the virtual bank, we also did a webinar with the CEOs and CIOs of the virtual banks last year. This year, none of them work for the same organization anymore. So I think talent is going to be quite a big challenge for them.
So, how much of a threat do you think digital banks will pose to traditional banking at this stage, especially given that none have achieved profitability yet in other countries?
So there are those who have already achieved profitability. So if you look at banks like Oak North, if you look at banks like Starling, they have already reported a profitable year. And I think the challenge is that when we think about digital banks, we often look at it from a very Western lens, right? We think about Monzo, we think about all these kind of banks. But in Asia, a lot of digital banks have actually seen a good degree of success. You know, that includes Tencent's WeBank, Kakao's KBank, MBank's MyBank in China. So I don't know if we can draw the kind of parallels between what happens in the Western market and what will happen in Malaysia, because the Asian digital banks, I think, is an entirely different beast from the Western market. But having said that, some segments may be more at risk than others. So if you look at SMEs, if you look at the retail market, those are typically what the current digital banks are targeting. But if you look at corporates, I think those corporates are a bit old school. They would prefer to be working with a banking partner.
You know, when we talk about the concept of a digital bank, Vincent, oftentimes it sounds like something's very new, but it on the face of it, it really just is the digitalization of banking products, right? From what you understand at this juncture, is there going to be any big changes between the kind of products that they offer, aside the fact that the demographics change?
Well, I think that depends on who you talk to. Yesterday, specifically during the press conference, Shanta, who's the CEO of Boost Holdings, specifically stressed that, oh, you know, it's not going to be a digitized version of a conventional bank. We're going to roll out new products. But I think, like you said, right, at the end of the day, it's really about the demographic they're able to target, the kind of UX that they are able to provide. I think at the end of the day, the main selling point is that they are able to make the unit economics work where conventional banks weren't able to.
Right. And I guess when we take a look forward, Vincent, what are you keeping your eyes on and keeping an eye out for in terms of changes in the landscape over the next year or so? What is particularly catching your attention?
So I think definitely we are interested to see how the incumbent banks are going to react, because for as long as we have observed since the whole fintech revolution, all the banks are like, we're not so worried, you know, maybe they'll do a bit of remittance, maybe they do a bit of payments, we're still pretty safe, right? But right now, you have potentially big tech players that are coming in who really have the firepower, who really have the capital to disrupt the market. So I think, you know, bankers who hasn't woken up to the fact that someone might come and take their market share are waking up and they're like, okay, let's come up with a defensive strategy to come up with this, right? And I think that's part of the reason why IHB is also going to a consortium, besides increasing the access to other markets, is also to have a defensive strategy to disrupt themselves before they're disrupted by others.
Yeah, so, you know, banks, right, traditional banks, they are saying that the wealth management service will remain their stronghold. And do you necessarily agree with that, given the current landscape that keeps changing?
That's a good question. And I think that really depends on the segment. So I think for the most part, if you look at the high net worth individual with very personalized service from their relationship managers, I think that part would still be relatively safe. But those are the upper echelons of society. And I think their version of banking is very different from most of us mortal folks, right? And I think for the most part, if we look at some of the wealth management players, we have seen some disruption in that space. And I suspect, you know, if the digital banks do go into that space, you will see some disruption with the retail market.
Suppose the robo-advisors.
Yeah, exactly.
Vincent, thanks so much for joining us this morning. That was Vincent Fong, Chief Editor at FinTech News Malaysia, giving us a look at the digital banking landscape as it is taking shape here in Malaysia. Right now, though, we are heading into some messages and then up next, diving into Malaysia's corporate governance landscape with analysis from David Berry, Deputy President at the Malaysian Institute of Corporate Governance. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.